Today, we have a speaker that's one of my personal heroes. This man was one of the most outspoken advocates for against the mask mandates that I know of. And believe me, I searched. I searched for people that were speaking out against that because of my own personal issue with the masks. But I just wanted to give everyone a very quick update about what's going on around the world. The world is on the move, and we need to be on the move. In Germany, the farmers are protesting in their thousands. They're bringing their tractors to the government buildings, and they're dumping loads of manure all over in front of the government buildings in Germany. And I'm talking about a lot of farmers. They brought out thousands of tractors and trucks. And this is reminding me of what happened in Canada with the truckers protest. And then the Dutch farmers did the same thing. So the world is on the move. And in Texas, we have the governor of Texas just kicked out the feds at the border and brought in the National Guard to secure the Texas border from illegal immigration. So that's going on in Texas, so there's a lot of things going on. But I don't want to waste too much time here because I'd like to introduce our guest speaker today, Dr. Mark McDonald. And Mark, if you wouldn't mind, come on up and give us a little talking to.
Thank you. Well, it's 2024. Welcome to 2023, all over again.
Hell no, come on.
I am going to give you some bad news. It's going to get worse before it gets better. The first 6 months of this year are going to suck. But I'm going to give you some good news, which is the second 6 months may, because the first 6 months are almost guaranteed to suck, may be revolutionary and transforming. I'm going to explain how and why I believe that. My name is Dr. Mark McDonald. I am a child and adolescent psychiatrist in private practice, have been for about 12 years in West Los Angeles. I'm also the author of two books, which are here for sale and signature at the table after my talk. Thank you, Ash. United States of Fear in the left hand and Freedom from Fear in the right hand. The last time I was here, I did have the first book available. The second book, I believe, was published after my first talk with you a couple of years ago. And it came on the heels of the first one, which was rather dark and bleak in explaining what I considered to be this mass delusional psychosis that had taken over the United States in 2020 and 2021. The second book was about a way out. How can we as individuals and as a nation find our way through the darkness and become free from what I began to consider not just a psychosis, but an actual addiction to fear? I see it as a clinical addiction, no different than, say, a cigarette or gambling or pornography. I remember watching a young woman late at night walk past me. This was just a few months ago in Los Angeles. Sees me from about 20 or 30 feet away, and as she's approaching me, she instinctively reaches into her pocket for a what? For a cigarette? Ding, ding, ding. For a face diaper mask, which she dutifully put on, and I believe unconsciously. I don't even think that she thought about it until she passed by me, and then after about 6 feet, the magic number that, as we all know, who's been listening to the news recently, Anthony Fauci himself just admitted in the last 2 days was completely fabricated, made up out of thin air. But she took the mask off, and she pursued and proceeded on her way. That was a good example to me of the transformation of the psychosis, the panic, the I am afraid behavior that locks out the ability to think into something else, into something more chronic, which is an unconscious reactive behavior, which is like an addiction. People are doing this now still in urban areas, this masking, 3 years later, despite zero evidence that it's assisting of any kind in eliminating or even limiting the transmission of a respiratory infection or respiratory virus at all. And in the presence of voluminous evidence to show that it does significant harm socially, emotionally, psychologically, and medically, especially to young children. And my focus as a clinician is children because I'm a child psychiatrist, so this is of special concern to me. So I wrote my second book, Freedom from Fear, to explain, not on the macro, but on the micro level, similar to a 12-step program or Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life, how does an individual go through steps, starting with, if anyone is in any way familiar with AA, the first step is acknowledging you have an addiction. I'm Mark McDonald. I have an addiction. Welcome. That's what they do at every meeting. Well, this is what people need to do who are suffering from fear addiction. They need to first acknowledge that they have an addiction, because without that acknowledgement, how are you ever going to release yourself from it? When I work with therapy patients, the first thing I tell them, after letting them know that we have to conduct a shared reality in the room, meaning if you see an elephant out the window and I see a tree, there's no way that we can have a productive conversation because you're psychotic. You're suffering from a visual hallucination. Well, if you believe that wearing a mask protects you from an infection, you are clinically psychotic. You cannot think. So we have to share the reality, otherwise there's no way to move forward. Well, as soon as I tell them that, the next thing I tell them is that the first step towards moving into a more healthy reality is awareness. Without awareness, you cannot take informed action. You can take action, but it won't be informed. So we have to have awareness. And that's why acknowledging the addiction is so important. That puts it in your awareness module in your brain so that you can then make the decision the next time you walk past someone at night on the street to not put your hand in the pocket and to put the mask on. Or maybe you do put it on, but you're aware that you're doing it and you realize you're doing it for bad reasons. That's still a step forward, because that means maybe the next time you'll preempt that and you'll pull out a carrot or a pen and you'll chew on that like an addict to tobacco does. That's still better than putting the cigarette in your mouth. The harm reduction model is one I support. As we all know, the enemy of the good is often the perfect and the ideal. I don't expect this country to become perfect. I don't expect it to be the ideal America. Liberals do. That's why they vote for leftists, because they can't accept reality as it is. They can't accept that our world is made up of humans and humans are imperfect. Therefore, everything about our society will always be imperfect. And instead of accepting that, they choose to destroy it and to elect people who destroy it, who promise them that they can make it perfect. And what do? They wind up taking away all of the good and leaving nothing in their wake except destruction and chaos. That is where we have been for at least the last 3 years, and there was probably a slow burn going on for decades before that, depending on how far you want to step towards the so-called conspiracy theory side of evaluating world events. But I'm not going to talk about that today. What I want to talk about is the decline of the United States in the last 3 years and how that's affecting 2024, and why it's, in my view, my opinion, not even possible, if you're rational, that this country gets significantly better in the first half of the year. One obvious example to support my point is economics. This is not, despite what the Biden regime would have you believe, this is not a subjective area of life. When you go to the store and you purchase a hamburger or a hot dog or a pound of fruit, or you go to McDonald's and you get a Happy Meal, you are charged a price. And that price is significantly higher now than it was 2 years ago. If you try to take out a loan or a mortgage on a piece of property, the cost of that mortgage is significantly higher than it was 2 years ago, despite what Uncle Joe will tell you. polls came out today, and there's going to be more of these as we approach the election in the fall, that show that Americans in general, regardless of their political affiliation, recognize that reality, and they are rejecting the lies that they are being told by the administration today. These lies are part of a propaganda campaign that they've been engaging in full bore for the last 2 to 3 years. I just started teaching a class last week. It's going to be under open enrollment until the end of January on IPAC EDU called the Red Pill Course, or How to Not Be Fooled, a primer on propaganda and recognizing it, like everything we're told out of Washington, which is nothing more than propaganda. Corinne Jean-Pierre, the PR woman in Washington, gives us nothing but propaganda. What is propaganda? Propaganda is a lie with the intention, well, lies are statements made with the intent to deceive, but propaganda is more than a lie. It's a lie with a political intention to change your voting behaviors, to change your actions. It's a way of manipulating and controlling you. It's not just deception. It goes beyond that. And I think that it's very important that people become aware of propaganda and learn to recognize it so that they can then take action to follow truth and to engage in the shared reality that most Americans have who were not psychotic up until 2020. Dr. Jeff Barkey, who's a colleague of mine and also my co-podcast host, have just relaunched our podcast starting, I believe, 2 days ago, called Informed Dissent. Informed Dissent is about the intersection of healthcare and politics. We took a hiatus to rebrand and get a new team together, and I think we're going to come out even stronger this year. Our first episode was published about 2 or 3 days ago, and it collected 2,000 views in the first 24 hours. We're going to continue with more guests and more publications throughout the rest of the year, and we're actually starting off the year advertising and requesting sponsors. So any businesses that share like-minded views with us, we're happy to entertain consideration for a sponsorship for our Informed Dissent podcast. I also am writing and have written for the last couple of years a weekly Substack, and the Substack, called Dissident MD, discusses the issues that I'm sharing with you today, my views, particularly issues I think that are pertinent to that week. Informed Dissent is free to listen to. My Substack is free to read. And my books are not free, but they're available to you for purchase. So in 2024, I expect things are going to become significantly worse before they get better. Economically, that's essentially a no-brainer. A mortgage in Las Vegas for an average home was $1,244 2 years ago. It's now $2,600. Same property. More than 100% increase in cost. That's because mortgage rates are up at 7%. They probably dropped down to 5.5 to 6 now, but they hit 7% about 3 or 4 months ago, up from 2.5% under Trump. So they went up 300%. So to get a mortgage, you now have to pay double the cost that you did a couple of years ago. That's a fact. That's a reality. And if you deny that, you're either lying or you're psychotic. There's no other explanation. Same thing with masks. There's no difference. We have, as David just said earlier, we have an open border. We have millions of people, now even accepted and acknowledged by the Biden administration, over 1 million and maybe 2 million per year, over 7 million in the last 2.5 to 3 years, completely unknown individuals, not Mexicans, but individuals from all over the country, most of them young men, not women and children, many of them from China, many of them carrying backpacks and what looked like government-issued merchandise and equipment. Why? Well, we can only speculate, but I assume that it has to do with helping to bring down our country by coordinating launched attacks against power supplies, against schools, against government facilities, against our electronic infrastructure. Why else would they be here? They're not here for the money, at least not the Chinese. The cartels, the drug smugglers, the sex traffickers, they're not here for the money either. They're just working their business. They're not here to obtain a better life. They're here to wreck the country. 116 different nationalities enter the country illegally since Trump left office. Millions of them. almost all of them completely unprocessed, unknown, very few arrested. The few that have been arrested and repatriated, many of them are known terrorists on terrorist watch lists, known cartel narco-traffickers, and this is a fraction of a percent of the actual people that come through. And this is continuing. The Biden administration abjectly refuses to even allow Texas to control its own borders. It's not just dereliction. They're actively conspiring to destroy our borders and our country. Our school system is no better, and it's only getting worse. The government is in collusion with and controlled by the National Teachers Association. Weingarten is the president. She's an obnoxious, obese, disgusting, middle-aged woman who hates children. And she's in charge of the National Confederation of Teachers. The state-level woman is no better. She's a shrill, obese harpy who takes millions of dollars in campaign contributions funneled into the political auspices of Newsom and all the others who issue legislation and sign off on it to help remove the parental rights of children in the state of California, including legislation that was passed last year. It's now in effect to create a safe state, meaning the state of California, for children who come from outside the state without parental consent to have their breasts removed or their penises cut off and to be injected with hormones. Chemical castration and genital mutilation. And I'll talk about that transgender ideology and what it's doing to our country a little bit later. But this is what's happening in the school system. There's an educational organization for the rights of children called PERC, Protecting the Educational Rights of Kids, that I've spoken for several times in the Valley and also in Orange County, that succeeded in quashing at least three or four of these bills at the end of 2023 that would have gone into effect in 2024. But the schools are a disaster. They're a cesspool. You cannot in good conscience, with very rare exceptions, send your children to a government school in this country, certainly in this state today. It's not possible. Crime, disaster, everybody that lives in Los Angeles County knows this. George Gascon's name was mentioned earlier. Many district attorneys throughout the United States today are actively seeking to make their cities less safe by protecting criminals and attacking victims. They're going after police officers. There is almost no one that wants to join police forces now. Why would you? So we have an absence of actual police, human beings that are meant to protect us in most cities in the country. I remember last year I read a news report about New Orleans that took over the spot as the number one murder capital in the country about a year ago. After a few more losses, terminations of police who just didn't want to work there anymore because they weren't being supported, the woman running the local police departments, the mayor essentially, she announced that if there was a crime committed, even violence, even a shooting, and no one was dead, the police could not respond because they didn't have any officers. They had one police officer to run the night shift for the entire metropolitan district of New Orleans, the number one murder capital in the world. And of course, what was he busy doing? Following the bodies that were dropping every night. But short of that, he didn't have anywhere to go. He had no time. He couldn't do anything. This was about a year ago. Things have not gotten better. Crime in LA is far worse than it was a year ago. Medical. A friend of mine who ran unsuccessfully for one of the County Board of Supervisors seats last year, Roxanne Hoge, she just posted a video from Cedars this morning. The video showed her walking out of Cedars-Sinai, being denied the ability to donate blood for the blood drive to a designated donor. She had designated the donor because they demanded that in order to give blood today in Los Angeles, 2024, you must wear a mask.
Oh, hell no.
That's why I said 2024, welcome to 2023 all over again. In a lot of ways, nothing has changed. It has only gotten worse. I do not believe it is possible for things to get significantly better right now in this country, in this state, in this city. I just don't believe it. I am not an optimist in the sense that I believe things will get better because I simply hope for it. I believe things will get better when I see evidence to support the opinion that they will get better. And I don't see that now. I just don't. The transgender issue. This is something that I want to mention specifically because it is probably the most important unifying domestic issue that we have today in the United States. Not because it affects children, although that's certainly important. There are many Americans that don't have kids, or their kids are older and they're not part of this cult. Why does it matter to you? Why should you care? And I think it's important for this reason. The battles that we faced in 2020, 2021, and to some degree ongoing 2023, 2024, which were all freedom-based, many of them medical, I said back then, and I still say it now, they were not the war. They were battles. They were, depending on your point of view and, again, how far into the conspiratorial swamp you want to go, they were forays, they were tentative tests for how quickly and how readily people would give up their freedoms. They were abject grabs for money and for power. They were attempts to redefine and renorm what we considered to be okay, or all of this, or a combination of it. But they weren't the war, because clearly a medical pandemic, a viral pandemic, has to have an endpoint. You can't just keep pushing out another variant and expect to hit the same degree of acceptance and panic that you did with the first. We're up to what, number 13, 15 booster variant? And the numbers show that most Americans, and this includes those who were jumping in line to get these ridiculous mRNA injections back in the summer and fall of 2020, they're not biting. A lot of these injections had been literally dumped. Of course, after we paid for all of them with our tax dollars and made Pfizer and Moderna rich. But they're being dumped. No one's taking them anymore. Nobody but the absolute crazies. So this can't continue. There's no more juice in that lemon. This is why I think the transgender issue is so important, because the transgender ideology or cult movement, it represents a fundamental attempt to undermine our nation that goes way beyond just freedom and medicine. The reason for this is that it is not possible to entirely destroy the United States without destroying the family. Because the family is the essential basic building block unit of the community, which then leads to the city and the county and the state and the nation. As long as you have intact families, you have people who are relatively independent as a unit from the government. If you have parents and sisters and brothers and children, that unit then connects up with other families in your neighborhood, and you associate with clubs, you do homeschool, you share food, you share vehicles, you talk amongst yourselves about what's going on outside of your community and how you can protect against incursions. The government doesn't like that. This is why Mao, when he took power in mainland China, after throwing Chiang Kai-shek out and driving them into Taiwan, the first thing he did was he tried to conscript the children. He tried to take over the younger generation, remove them from the homes physically and educationally by turning them against their parents, against their teachers, and against the intellectuals. He knew that if he could take the children, if he could obtain allegiance from children using propaganda, he could destroy the family. He could encourage them to no longer have families and have children, just have babies for the government that would just become another army. That is basically what the government and all of the groups that support the transgender movement are trying to do now. They're trying to remove the children, both mentally and physically, from the home, from the family, and take them into an indoctrination clinic at the schools, these clubs, these LGBTQXYA plus whatever clubs, that they can then use as ways to build an identity for the child, particularly adolescent girls, that they struggle with naturally, because natural adolescence and development for young girls is difficult, and say to all of these children, again, mostly young girls, you are not struggling right now because you are a young woman becoming a woman, worrying about your physical shape and state and your acceptance and your perception by other boys in the school. No, no, that's not the issue. The issue really is that you think that you're a boy. And we're going to solve that for you by having you go to the nurse and start getting testosterone and joining the clubs to shave your hair, change your clothes, switch your pronouns. And by the way, we won't tell your parents anything. In fact, we're not allowed to because Gavin Newsom just passed legislation that prohibits us from doing that. And eventually, in a year or two, when you're 14, 15, 16, depending on the cutoff for that school district or that county or that legislative area, we will then support you both confidentially and also through money and through essentially illegal doctor's permission forms without the consent of your parents to go and have surgical removals of your breasts, your penis, and move you into the other sex, which of course is impossible, but that's what they're doing. If they can succeed in turning children against their parents, making them wards of the state, perpetual patients, they will have guaranteed an endless supply of money and funds to the medical industry in this country, the clinics, the universities, the individual surgeons, therapists who support this. And in addition, they will make it impossible for the children to have a normal life as adults. They will be perpetually depressed. They will be sick. They will die early. They will not have children because they will be sterilized and infertile, and we won't have another generation. If you can destroy the family, if you can exterminate the next generation, now you've truly wrecked the country. And I think this is really the end goal. Each group has its own sub-goal, whether it's money or power, hatred, but I think the overarching goal is the elimination of the next generation through the transgender movement. There is no other explanation because there is no way for a rational, thoughtful person to in any way support this or be sympathetic to it. It's not possible. It is probably the most black or white issue we have here. I actually see it in a very similar way to the attack on Israel a couple of months ago in October. You saw the most black or white, or black and white, event in the Middle East that has happened in the last 30 years. And a small but vocal percentage of our population, the population around the world, supported the massacres of the Jews and the Israelis. There was no moral equivalency. There was no, well, they felt really bad, so you have to understand that why they would want to stab pregnant women and rip out their fetuses and burn them in ovens. It's understandable, right? Because they've been oppressed. No, actually, it's not. Someone asked a question of a Hamas sympathizer in the BBC when he was being interviewed. I believe it was Douglas Murray asked this. He said, "You seem to be sympathetic to the plight of the Palestinians and the pro-Hamas people, which are one and the same." He said, "If you had been, as you said you were, marching with black Americans for freedom 30, 40 years ago, and there had been a group of people joining it saying, kill the blacks, how long would you have stayed in that movement supporting the rights of black Americans to be equal to white Americans?" He said, "I would have left immediately." So then why are you still supporting groups that say they're sympathetic to Palestine who are saying, kill the Jews? Why are you sympathetic to that movement when it's so obvious that it's a genocidal campaign? He had no answer to that question. That's what I mean by black and white. And the transgender movement is exactly the same. It is a black or a white issue. It is supra-political. It is way above politics. It is not possible to support it and still say that you are a conscientious, rational, thoughtful American. And I'm seeing now a lot of Americans turning against it. And this is why I believe that the second half of this year may be a shift, the shift that I was hoping for in 2021 and 2022 that never materialized. I believed, and I was wrong about this, I believed that when the government came for the children, forcibly shooting them with mRNA injections, taking them out of schools, I believed that parents would stand up, especially mothers, and say, this is it. This is where I draw the line. This is where it ends. And most American mothers didn't do that. Some did, but most did not. Now, I'm seeing a shift. I'm seeing those same mothers who were okay with shots and masks, now they're saying, I am not okay with my daughter coming home with a boy's name, wearing boy's clothes, and getting hormone injections, and moving on to double mastectomies. I'm not okay with that. And this is coming not from the leftists, because the leftists are lost. We have about, 10-12% of the country that a lot of people call it the Elvis factor. If you ask any American if Elvis is still alive, about 12-14% will say he is. So let's just write off 12-14% of the American population right there. Any survey that says around 12-14% of the country agrees with X, well, that means nothing, because they'll agree with anything. We have about 12-14% of the population that is truly agreeing with and supporting the left. Abjectly. They're lost. They're hopeless. But there's a larger percentage of the population that has been fairly, I would say, pussified in the last couple of years, very weak, very lacking in power and courage. And that's about 60% or so of the population. Most of them are Democrats. They espouse what they would call liberal views, which are the same thing as conservative views, actually. There's no difference. But they vote for leftists consistently because the Democrat Party is a left-wing party. It is a neo-Marxist, neo-Maoist party. There is no way that a Democrat Party-supported Democrat politician can do good because the party dictates the positions, and the positions are all Marxist and neo-Maoist. All of them. There's no exceptions to that. So if you want to do good as a Democrat, you have to go to a different party. And there's really only one other viable party in this country, and that's the Republican Party. So the only people in this country today that are actually fighting for and supporting liberal values are conservatives. The left doesn't. Certainly liberals don't, because they keep voting for leftists. But now it seems to me that things are getting so bad, and they're continuing to get bad. I mentioned a few examples earlier, schools, healthcare, and the economy, not to mention what's going on internationally with our hollowed-out military. God forbid we should actually get engaged in a real war. We don't have anyone to fight. We don't have any equipment. I think the most recent naming of a naval vessel a few months ago determined it would be named after Harvey Milk, who was assassinated in San Francisco, and a known pederast and pedophile who consorted with underage boys. And they want to make the boat either vegetarian or vegan. I'm not making this up. And electric powered. It sounds like something out of Babylon B. But this is actually happening, right? So even if we don't have a military conflict, which would be a catastrophe, the country is going to get a lot worse in the next 6 months. The sugar high, as Jeffrey Tucker, who's one of my favorite writers at brownstone.org, you can see him at Town Hall. There's a lot of places where they republish his columns. Wonderful writer and an economist, but writes just very simple, plain language. He wrote recently that we've been on a sugar high the last couple of years. The sugar high from all the funny money that Uncle Joe printed in the first couple of years of this pandemic, which now occupies exactly 40% of our monetary supply. And shocker, inflation has been at 40%. You know, math doesn't lie. Because of this printing of money, because of this inflationary cycle, there's no way that we're going to be able to get back to the way we were soon. It's going to get worse. Prices are going to continue to skyrocket. Loan mortgages are going to go up. People are going to start to lose their jobs because a lot of people are now being fired because there's no money going into restaurants and bars. A man was interviewed earlier today, was a barber. He said, I don't have anybody in my barber shop anymore. I had to raise my prices $10. People are cutting their hair at home. Well, when you hear these kinds of stories all over the country, that's a bad sign. And it's not just Republicans that need to get their hair cut. Democrats do too. So I think things are going to get really bad in the next 6 months, right at the time that we have a four-year election cycle. And it's going to get so bad, it won't even be possible for the propaganda machine to cover it up, because everybody has to get haircuts. Everybody has to eat. Everybody at some point has to buy or sell a property. There's no way to avoid that. So people are going to start to notice, and they're going to start to see, as they are, the discrepancy between the reality that they're living and what they are being fed by the Biden administration. Every time he gets on the camera and says, the economy is going great, prices are going down, it's possible to buy a house now, people look at their receipts and they say, no, it's not. And this is everybody. It doesn't matter who they vote for. And they say, this is simply not true. And I'm not going to put up with this anymore. And I'm not going to vote for it again for four more years. So I expect that in the fall, we have a possibility, a probability, but not a certainty, to actually have an electoral revolution. I thought we would have one 2 years ago. I was wrong. I thought things were bad. I thought they couldn't get any worse, and they have. We haven't descended into civil war. We don't have massive nationwide unrest, but we're getting very close. Just a couple days ago, we had pro-Hamas sympathizers tearing down riot walls 10 feet in front of the fence that borders the White House. And they were allowed to do it. We literally have terrorists and terrorist sympathizers within stone shot and stone's throw of our Capitol building. And our police forces and our military are letting them do it. This is how bad things have become. I don't know how much worse it can get before it collapses, but a step above that, to the point where everyone, the 60 to 80% of the country, plus the conservatives, forget the left, all agree that this has to stop. So I'm optimistic that there's a possibility for a significant change in the second half of the year, but I don't think it's going to happen in the first half. I don't think we're going to have a happy new year until the fall. I am going to continue to write. I'm going to continue to speak, both my podcast, my writing, and I'm also going to publish at least another book in the next 6 to 9 months, probably an anthology of my Substack. I'm going to do probably a trilogy from 2020, 2021, and 2022, and then add in 2023 at the end of next year, that I hope will bring what I'm writing and speaking about to a wider audience. I have always said to my patients and to the public that my goal is not to make people happy or comfortable or even really to inspire them. There are people who do that really well. Dr. Simone Gold, AFLDS founder, is great at inspiring people to take action. I hope that what I say and do inspires people to take action. But my primary goal is really to inform and to speak the truth and to nudge people in the direction, not of agreeing with me, but of thinking for themselves. That was the last sentence of my first book, Think for Yourself. If you do not, others will think for you and they will not be thinking of you. That's Thoreau that I quoted. If everyone could simply think for himself or herself, most of our problems would go away very, very quickly. In fact, a lot of our problems would go away overnight because this country doesn't really have systemic problems. We have created problems because we have been acting on lies that we have been told for the last 3 years, if not 10, 20, 30 years. And we've created our own problems. I mean, look at California. This state was the best state in the country when I was growing up in the 70s. Best school system, affordable housing, still the best weather, virtually no crime. It was amazing. And now, look, you can't even go out at night in most cities without being worried about being robbed, murdered, or raped. Everything is expensive. You can't buy a house. It's trashed. The schools are a disaster. I'll leave you with this. This may not apply to all of you, because you don't all have children, but a lot of people do, or you have friends who have kids, and some people will ask you, what can I do? What are the three things that I can do to move towards a better life and a better 2024? A few things that I have said repeatedly, and I still believe in them, are this. If you have children, if you have grandchildren, take them out of government or private schools. Remove them. There are very few exceptions to this. There are a few, yes, a few private schools and a few government schools that are decent. Most of them are not. Take them out and homeschool them. If you're a grandparent and your children say, I can't afford to do that, give them money so that one of the parents can stay home and teach the kids. Use your money. You probably have more than you need if you're a grandparent. Not always, but often. Grandparents have some extra money. Pay your child to take their children, your grandchildren, at home and teach them. That would be so helpful and so important. There's nothing you can do. Once the kids are in college, it's a lost cause. Second thing, take away all the cell phones from the kids. No child under 18 should have his hands on a smartphone. There's no exception to this. There is no reason for it. Give them a flip phone if they need to call mom for an emergency. The cell phone is the gateway drug to all kinds of bad things. I have kids in my practice, 13, 14 years old, that are taking videos of themselves, mostly girls, to post them on Instagram to get likes or TikTok, and they get 200,000 or 300,000 likes, not always from their friends, often from predators. And those predators then will move them into OnlyFans, which is an online prostitution page for kids as well as adults. And they earn money by prostituting online, by dancing and taking their clothes off and performing sex acts. And then they use that money to go and they buy handbags and drugs and all kinds of stuff. Cell phone is horrible. It's toxic. Adults use it too much. Kids should never be using it. Never, ever. And the last thing is model. It's a horrible, horrible toxin. Model. Model good male and female behavior. Husband and wife, mother and father. Children don't get that anymore. That's one of the reasons why they move into this transgender ideology. They have been suckered because a lot of adults are afraid to say that there are men and women, and men and women have different roles, and they are discreet. A father cannot take the place of a mother and vice versa. It doesn't work. Children need two parents, and they need two opposite sex parents. Nothing against gays, but you can't have two gay women or two gay men raise a child and have the same quality of outcome as a man and a woman. And it's not their sexual orientation. It's the fact that they're the same sex. That's the problem. These are things that people are afraid to say. They need to say it more. It's truth. It's reality. Even if it makes some people and some groups uncomfortable. Other things you can do, simple things, and I've actually started doing them to help decrease some of the economic catastrophe, at least until we can start earning money again. Stop going to restaurants. Buy your food, preferably grow your food if you can, but buy your food and cook at home. You can use really interesting cooking systems that I just started to get into because I got sick of paying $100 for two people to go have a crappy meal with lousy service in an LA restaurant and come home hungry and angry. And I bought, for about $150, I bought a sous vide system, which is like a water immersion device. You put in a bucket of water, and you can put frozen meat that's in, you know, packages, and you drop this immersion heater in, you turn on the temperature, set it for like 130 degrees for medium rare, and you just let it run for a few hours. It never overcooks. You can take it out 8, 10, 12 hours later, take the meat out, slice open the package, put it on an iron skillet at really high temperatures, and in 3 minutes, you have a nice steak or a piece of chicken or fish. And it's better than what you get in the restaurants. You can get a smoker, $300 or $400 smoker with an auger that pumps pellets in. Traeger makes them. And you can smoke cheap cuts of meat like brisket, really cheap, that you wouldn't want to eat if it were cooked for like 30 minutes, but you cook it for 7 or 8 hours, 10 or 12 pounds, and you get a bunch of people over, your neighbors, your friends, your family. You can feed 10 or 12 people for the cost of two people at a restaurant. And then you have the community going. So you save money and you build community that way. You can drop your health insurance policy. I dropped my medical insurance policy January 1. I'd had it for 15, 20 years, Blue Cross Blue Shield. It goes up 20% every year. And so does the out-of-network deductible and payments and all that stuff goes up. It's basically catastrophic care policy that costs a fortune. I don't want it anymore. So I got rid of it. They wanted to increase my premium this year an additional 40%. And they raised all the caps before they actually start paying things off. I said, why am I doing this? So I dropped it and I joined MediShare. They have a lot of different medical sharing policies out there. They don't work that well for really old and sick people. But if you're not that sick, you don't see a doctor every week, you're not on insulin pumps, you're pretty healthy, you can save up to 80% on your premiums by dropping commercial health insurance or Obamacare. It's all Obamacare now. You know, he's still with us. and join a medical sharing policy. And then take that money that you saved and do something else with it. Put it into a savings account in case you do have a medical catastrophe, so you have cash on hand. These things work very well. These are some of the things that you can do. But just know that even if you do all these things, the country, not you necessarily, but the country will continue to decline, I believe, for at least another 6 months before we can turn this around. At the end of the year, though, I think we have a shot, finally a decent shot of things getting better, but only because I think that still, just like a drug addict, our nation has to hit rock bottom. And we have still not hit rock bottom. I thought we had, and every time I think so, there's a false floor and there's another bottom underneath it. But I think we're getting very, very close because we're at the verge of non-functionality right now. Like the gears are just going to stop turning on every level. I'm going to stop now and take some questions, and I'll take some more questions. See what the time is? Take some questions after the questions at the table here where I'll be signing and selling books for those who wish to purchase them. I also have some little cards there with a QR code in case all of you might be wondering, where can I find this or where can I find that? What's the website for this? What's the website for that? The answer to all those questions, which is Dissident MD, is on that QR code, which has all of the links to all of the stuff that I do on all the internet sites. And you can just scan it with your phone, and it just pops right up, and you can save that link. And if you don't have a phone with you, just take a card home with you, and when you get home, scan that link, and then you can find everything I talked about, everything I do on the internet. Most of it is actually free. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. Mark McDonald. Folks, if you have a question for Mark, please come up to this microphone. Don't shout out your questions from the tables. Come over to the microphone so we can get it on video. And Manny has got our first question.
Thank you, Doctor, for your wisdom. I have a question about the medical share. Last time I checked, when I went through my state taxes, I'm pretty sure if you even go 1 month without medical insurance in California, Newsom will charge you $800. So how do you get around that?
That is true, but the medical sharing plans obviate that requirement. So they count, even though they don't count as insurance in the sense that for HSA policy law, the health spending accounts, you cannot use your health spending account to pay for expenses that go towards paying for the plan. You can get around the penalty for not having health insurance. So if you have an HSA plan, I'm sorry, a medical sharing plan, you are not subject to the I don't have insurance tax penalty.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for everything you've done. Everybody here really appreciates you.
Thank you.
And everything AFLDS has been doing. I don't really have a question, but I had a couple of comments regarding the vaccines being dumped. I have a friend who is having some work done on her home, and she has a contractor who goes to the dump regularly. And he told her that he went to the dump, and there were boxes and boxes and boxes of vaccines at the dump one day when he went there.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. So that was pretty, like, holy, you know what?
Evidence of the fact that what I am reading is true.
Yes. And I was thinking as you were talking about the transgender thing that the real goal was to end humanity. So thank you for confirming that. And the last thing is regarding the rock bottom. I kind of keep an eye on what people are saying on Nextdoor in my community. And I have never seen so many break-ins and all kinds of crazy things on Nextdoor. And I'm one of the first people that was ever on it. And among other things, what has been happening is, and I've actually been visiting some of the local stores and businesses, there are armed robberies in my neighborhood today, and there never, ever, ever were before. And I've been calling my city council person, and we've been having conversations on Nextdoor about this. And people are buying, they're talking online on Nextdoor about they're going to go get a gun. I have never seen anything like that. I think it's, I support that totally. But that to me is a sign that people are fed up and they're at their breaking point. So I think we are at the point of it's incendiary right now. We're just right on the cusp of maybe so civil war.
You're echoing my points. Yep. Two quick comments to what you just said. One on transgender, and I didn't say this earlier, so I want to mention it now. Thank you for reminding me. Unfortunately, one of the biggest driving forces within the populace, actually the institutions as well, I'm sorry to say, for the transgender movement is women. This has been incredibly shocking and disappointing to me. Therapists, teachers, surgeons, clinicians, most of them that are actively participating in and supporting the transgender medical surgical movement are women. It's unbelievable. So there's something very sick. It's like almost like a sickness that has infected the minds of a lot of the professional women in our country who are sacrificing children. The idea, that women are intrinsically, biologically programmed to protect children appears to not be true. Second, crime. Yes, the crime is up. I remember the story of a woman in Venice, young woman, young, white, middle-class, Democrat-voting woman, who was run over and her baby in a carriage by a 16-year-old boy who had stolen a car, drove it down the wrong way in the alley, and targeted her. You know, in an alley, there's no sidewalk, right? So you can't jump on the sidewalk. Drove into her specifically, hit her, flipped over the baby carriage, and then crashed into a telephone pole about half a block further down. She was interviewed. She survived. She had cuts and bruises. The baby, miraculously, wasn't injured. They both could have been killed. He was arrested. George Gascon released him immediately because he was a juvenile and put him in community service. He had priors as well. He was a gangbanger. The woman was interviewed locally, and then by Tucker Carlson before he was fired. This was about a year or two ago. And she said, I'm disgusted. I'm fearful. I am moving out of the state. I voted for George Gascon. I think he's terrible, but I will continue to vote for Democrats. So, yes, things are going to have to get a lot worse before they get better.
Hi. Brief comment, then the question. So a couple of years ago, you know, in the local gym that I go to, they had the loop playing every 5 minutes or so, you know, wear the face mask, it's required by law. And I would say, no, it's not. And people would start looking at me, you know, because it's not. So when you were here a couple of years ago, I asked you the question that I said, with these unelected bureaucrats, is it all 100% power that they're doing all this? And you said, well, it's 100% power. Well, it's 80% power, 20% they're sociopaths. Has that those percentages changed, and what's the percentage of that kind of thing in the general population?
I don't think it has changed. I still believe that under 20%, probably 10 to 20% is my rough estimate, rule of thumb, of the population are, I wouldn't say clinically sociopathic, but they lack a conscience, and they are seeking explicitly and knowingly to cause destruction. And they are essentially the left. On my course that I teach, I'm going to be talking about defining terms tomorrow on the Red Pill course at IPEC-EDU. And I'm going to explain and clarify that what I mean by the left is not liberals. It is the left in the tradition of Vladimir Lenin and Stalin and Mao and Pol Pot. These are all people from the left. We have a neo-Marxist or neo-Maoist campaign occurring in this country, which is represented by the left, which is represented by the DNC, which is supported by Democrat voters. But those who are actually thoughtfully, actively trying to destroy the country, I believe, are still around 20% of the less of the population. Within the Democrat Party, I believe that there are many active sociopaths, but I think there are others who are simply being controlled by the party, and they don't know what else to do, and they're scared, and they're going along with it because they don't have a viable alternative.
And I wanted to talk with you about sponsorship after you're done.
Thank you. Excellent. Glad to hear that.
Hi, I'm the proud owner of informed-descent.com. So we got to cooperate.
Oh. Informed-descent.com.
Informed-descent.com. So, you know, like-minded. James Roguski. And so I have been really perturbed when I hear people say, or doctors, oh, your doctor has to give you informed consent. That's just the wrong language. It drives me crazy. But I'm really here to meet you, and I want to ask you a question because I've repeated a story a number of times I heard a couple of years ago, and I believe I heard it from you, and I'm here to confirm that. Do you have or have you told a story in the past about the similarity between the door locking when you were in your residency going into a I've confirmed my thing. If you could tell that story.
Me.
If you could tell that story, that would be wonderful.
So in my first book, United States of Fear, I wrote, I don't know what chapter it was in at this point, but I wrote about a thought that I had had, and I had had repeatedly during 2020, 2021, that reminded me of my time in residency where I trained in inpatient psychiatry in a locked psychiatric ward. And that was that when I was in training, I would enter the room or the ward, and the door, heavy metal door with thick glass, would close behind me. And I would remind myself as I went into that area of the hospital that anyone I saw that didn't have a badge is most likely crazy. Therefore, I have to keep that in mind as I'm having conversations. Someone walks by and says, there's 20 rhinoceri crawling into my toilet. I'm not going to argue with him, right? I'm going to recognize he's probably one of the psychotic patients. And I'm going to say, oh, really? Well, that's a lot fewer than there were yesterday. Things are getting better. So when I was in and still in Los Angeles, leaving my home every day in 2020, 2021, and I would be surrounded by people jogging with masks on, driving past me on sometimes on scooters with masks. This was my favorite example, was a guy probably, I don't know, teenager, after party night, Friday night, he was riding around on a scooter, clearly having just left the bar drunk with his girlfriend holding on to his waist. The scooters are not designed for that, by the way. They're not designed for two people. With no light on in the front of the scooter. Both of them are drunk. Both of them are driving illegally at night with no light. And they're both wearing masks. And no helmets. I mean, if that just doesn't encapsulate the whole situation. But as I was leaving my house every day, I would have to remind myself, anyone I see, not with a badge on, but anyone I see wearing a mask is probably crazy. And to keep that in mind and avoid them and not have any engagements or interactions with them. And if I do, just keep in mind that they're crazy. So living in LA was like for me for 3 years, living inside of one giant locked psych ward. That's the story.
That's very good that you said that, because the whole thing, when you said anybody wearing a mask is psychotic, is that?
Yeah, I
to
mean.
To me, I think that's pretty harsh. Yeah. I think a lot of those people are just ignorant, or they're listening to the MSNBC or something like that. I mean, they're giving really false information and they're not getting the other side. And I think they really believe that the mask is protecting them. I don't think that you can really call them psychotic.
I'm using the term in a very non-clinical way. What I'm saying is, and I'm kind of using it kind of like the way I use the left, I'm using that term in this specific context to mean those people who are not living in reality and are abjectly refusing to acknowledge reality. In the first few weeks or months, I would have said that they were either scared, they were probably not psychotic, but scared, or they were being threatened and extorted into compliance. With rare exceptions now, that is no longer the case. Now, unfortunately, it's coming back, like at Cedars-Sinai. If you want to give blood, you have to wear a mask. But let's set aside that for a moment. In the last year, at least, there has been almost no requirement anywhere for people to wear a mask, certainly not at work or at schools or outside. Also, there has been such great access to voluminous information that is so incontrovertible to show that these masks are of absolutely no benefit and cause significant harm, that unless you have been, you know, living under a rock for the last 3 years, you would have come across that information. And for you to reject it means that you are actively fighting against reality. So that's why I say now they're psychotic. I don't mean clinically psychotic like hallucinations, but what I mean is that they've lost the capacity to think rationally and to use their brains in the way that normal people can. So I'm using it in a loose sense, but I think that we're. This is my position, and you're absolutely. I respect anyone's right to have a different position, especially on this. But I don't have a lot of sympathy for those people. I did at the very beginning. I don't, and I haven't for quite a long time, because it is not in my view, it is not a question of a right that may lead to harm to the self, but that doesn't affect other people. You have the right to be stupid. You have the right to do dumb things. I wish you didn't, but look, I'm all about rights, people's rights, right? That's why we're here. I don't believe you have the right to wear a mask outside of your home. You don't have the right to chew gum and stick it under a table. You don't have the right to urinate in public. You don't have the right to, I guess you do in some courts, to sleep on the street. You don't have the right to defecate on the street. You don't have the right to vomit on the street, to be drunk on the street. You don't have the right to do any of those things in public. And yet, you can do all of them in your own home. Right? Why not outside? Because we, as civilized people and a civilized society, have made an agreement that there's a social contract that is observed when you interact with the social politique, that you must observe a certain degree of decorum and you must show a certain degree of respect for other people and for your environment. And in my opinion, the mask violates that. When you have a mask on your face, it's very similar to walking around with a niqab, which is banned, by the way, in France. You're not allowed to do that because they consider it's a facial covering that's popular in the Arab world that women are forced to wear at penalty of being stoned or executed. In many countries in the Muslim world, especially the Sunni and also the Shiite Muslim world. When you do that, when you wear a covering on your face, you are not only projecting fear, you are also eliminating the possibility of people being able to recognize you. You are hiding your face, and I don't believe in this country you have the social right to hide your face when you're in public. Until 2020, you were legally prohibited from entering a bank with a mask on your face. And then in 2020, 2021, suddenly if you didn't enter the bank with a mask on your face, you were arrested. I mean, that is insane. Did somehow public safety suddenly shift? We're not talking about health here. We're talking about public safety. So for that reason, there's a lot of other examples, and you probably can understand. I don't need to go through them all with you. You all understand what I'm saying. I don't think it's a right to wear a mask outside your home. I think it should be banned. I think it should be illegal. And I think that people who insist on it, who are psychotic or otherwise, should not be allowed to do that, because I think it has utterly destroyed our social fabric. The one positive about the mask, the only positive, is that you can recognize the crazy people. So I would be a little sad to see that go, because yeah, even without the mask, they're still crazy. But I do think that they're doing I think they are destroying the environment, no different than people who graffiti, who urinate, who people vomit on the street. We don't allow that, at least we shouldn't, and I think we shouldn't allow masks. That's my view, and I feel very strongly about it, but obviously everybody has their own feelings and opinions. That's mine.
Okay, I've got one more real quick question, because I think we got a line here. But I go into my eye doctor, and he's wearing a mask. And this was only like a month or two ago. Anyways, I'm going, doctor, are you still wearing a mask? I mean, I was like, why are you still wearing a mask? And he said, if there's one person in his office that wants to wear a mask and is and can really cause him trouble in his office if everybody doesn't wear a mask then.
One so person, meaning a staff member?
One member, staff member, yeah. That is afraid of everybody not wearing a mask.
So you see that the fear of one person is now and still exercising veto authority over all the people in the office, which is incredibly sad, which gets me back to my main point I made earlier when I wrote my first two books. Fear is still, in many ways, at the crux of a lot of our problems. And if it's not outright fear, it's worry, it's intimidation, and I would even say as a consequence or an expression of that, it is cowardice. Yeah. And I think our nation, unfortunately, is a nation of pussies right now.
Yeah.
And I'm particularly upset at the men. The men in this country, this nation, we have a nation of male pussies. And I know this is true because the women that come to my office are not happy about it, and they can't find anyone to get married to or date because they're tired of it. And that has to change. We have to have men with more balls in this country.
100%. Thank you for everything you said to us today. So you think 6 months from now we'll be on the upside?
I think we have a possibility of that.
I can't imagine that, and only because Trump, the Trump card. I mean, are they, if he wins the primary, all bets are off. I mean, they're going to do every single thing they can. In fact, there's some people saying we won't even have an election. It's going to get so bad. So that's after your six-month window.
Well, what are the options? Either he gets taken off the ballot and we wind up with absolute civil unrest, catastrophe, but then I think a reemergence of a country that functions. Or he gets on the ballot.
And ditto.
And wins, and exactly, and we have the same thing happen. So either way, it's the same outcome. Things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. I can see one possibility. He gets on the ballot, he wins, but he doesn't win, like what happened the first time, in my view. And somehow the government is able to quell and quash, as they did before, the righteous uprising and demands for acknowledgement of wrongdoing. One of the problems that I see, this is the only sort of, in my calculation, the only wrench that could come into my belief that we're going to be getting better in the second half of the year is one thing, and that is lack of accountability. I think one of the biggest problems that we're facing today, in addition to things not getting so bad that we're, you know, the drug addict has hit rock bottom, is that we don't yet have enough accountability for what happened the last 3 years. Without accountability, you can't heal and you can't move forward. And that's one of the problems that has not yet been addressed. It's happening bits and pieces, but it hasn't happened yet. And without accountability, it's still possible that we could have another electoral disruption like we had 2 years ago and then even greater 4 years ago. I hope that doesn't happen, because I don't want to go have us go around another, what I would call a kind of, almost like on a ventilator, respirator, life support. I don't want to be, I think our country has been on kind of life support the last three, four years. I mean, we're alive, but we're not thriving. We're invalids. Our country is an invalid. And I would rather the patient go into cardiac arrest and either live or die than be in a state of this constant, ongoing invalidity. I don't like that. I don't think that's healthy for individuals. I don't think it's healthy for a country.
Doctor, I would like you to speak to, if you would, just so that all of us understand the pressure that was placed upon doctors and medical professionals during the fraudemic. Can you tell me what sort of coercive measures were used against you personally since you came out so strongly against masking and so forth? What did they threaten you with? That's what I'd like to know.
I can update you all on the federal legal case that I filed with and in conjunction with and in the support of Liberty Justice Center, which is a constitutional rights organization law firm in Chicago, against Assembly Bill 2098, which came on the heels of my receipt of a letter of formal inquiry of investigation into spreading medical misinformation, which the California Medical Board, then headed by non-physician attorney Christina Lawson, who's no longer the president of the medical board. We now have a physician in charge. I don't know if he's a good physician or not, but at least he's a doctor. She's not. She and her organization came after me. It was at the end of 2020, but it continued for a year and a half, a formal investigation into spreading medical misinformation, which wasn't even to my patients. This was medical misinformation that they deemed unprofessional and illegal, essentially, of posts I had made on social media, specifically Facebook and Twitter. And they were posts of research articles about the viability of the use of ivermectin to help control respiratory infections in the Chinese Wuhan virus. After about 6 months of these letters and threats, I had an investigatory seminar meeting via Zoom, of course. It was too dangerous back then to have a meeting in my office.
Big bad COVID.
And it was held by a young, like, looked like he was 12 years old, but he was probably 20, investigator that worked for the medical board who was, he was a nice guy. He was just basically following up on what his office told him to do. And a physician who was assigned to be a objective reporter from a medical perspective to determine whether I had violated medical norms. And this guy, to his credit, he asked me a lot of crazy questions. I was shocked. He was asking me questions about, are you aware of the ophthalmologic risk of the use of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine? How about the cardiologic risk of using ivermectin? And I said, actually, I am. And I know that I know that ophthalmologists have used hydroxychloroquine for years and find there's no risk. I know that cardiologists also use it for their patients and have absolutely no risk or concern. And the cardiology board has said it's not a risk. And he was like, oh, really? And he said, I didn't know that. And at the end of the hour, I had answered all of his questions and then some. He said, you know, I learned a lot, actually, today. He was an oncologist. He was a cancer doctor. I learned a lot about this. I didn't know a lot of this stuff, and I'm really glad that you informed me. And I said, well, you're welcome. And then about 2 or 3 months later, and this is where the paths cross of the federal lawsuit, we had filed, at the same time, we had filed a lawsuit against AB 2098, which was called the Medical Misinformation Bill, which would have made it not just unethical, but actually legislatively illegal for any physician in California to recommend to his patients any medical practice, procedure, treatment, whatever, that was not in accordance with the political position of the state of California. That was what the law said. If the governor's office says that this antibiotic is dangerous and we don't like it, you have to say that too. And if you don't, you will actually have your license taken away. That was the law. And of course, you know, what is safe and effective changes all the time. I mean, there's no real consensus. We just keep gathering information, changing our minds, etc. So on any given day, the political position could be different, and then you could get your license taken away. So we filed that lawsuit. It was winding its way through the courts. And in fact, the last hearing was in Pasadena at one of the district courts here in Pasadena. I think it was 9th District. Right after that hearing, in which, this was great, it was a panel of judges. The panel of judges had almost, I think, no actual questions for our attorney, for the plaintiff. But for the defendant, which was the attorney defending Christina Lawson and the medical board, they had a lot of questions. One of the women on the panel, in fact, asked question after question after question. Well, wait a minute. Why do we need a law? Don't we already have laws for malpractice? Don't we already have ethics codes? Why do we need a law to tell doctors what to say? Don't we already have all these mechanisms in place? She said, well, this is a special case because this is a special viral pandemic. Yeah. And the judge said, I don't really see that. And it's over now. What's going on? And she just kept hemming and hawing the attorney, didn't really have much to say. The panel said, well, we're going to recess and we'll issue an opinion in the next, you know, few months. That was what happened before my investigation video. After the video, about a month or two later, I got a letter in the mail, and it was dated the exact same date that Dr. Aaron Cariotti of UC Irvine's separate lawsuit against AB 2098 was sustained in a superior court in Southern California. It was a class action, so the sustaining only applied to his class, not to the entire state. I think it was the 13th of January. That day, the medical board sent me a letter, while I was still under investigation, of course, announcing that they were dropping the investigation, it was closed, and there would be no further inquiry into me at all. Dropped. The same day. And I think it happened because of the political pressure they were feeling from the win that Aaron Cariotti got against AB 2098 and the fact that I was party to a separate federal lawsuit which implicated the president of the medical board, Christina Lawson, for AB 2098, which she fully supported along with Gavin Newsom and Ron Bonta, the attorney general, who was also named in the lawsuit. So the investigation was dropped, and then Gavin Newsom, at the end of 2023, in conjunction with the Democrat supermajority of legislators in the state that voted AB 2098 into place, they all voted it out of place by repealing it. And then Gavin Newsom signed into law the repeal on January 1 of 2024. And meanwhile, the judges in our case, they just kept waiting and waiting and waiting because they didn't want to get involved in what they thought might be political to see if the repeal would be signed and go into effect. It was. And now because our case is essentially moot, because the law has been repealed, they're not going to rule on it. So there was no ruling. I was so disappointed. I really wanted to have a ruling. It was called McDonald versus Lawson. I wanted to have my case ruled with my name. Either way, I would have been happy. If it had been in my favor, I would have said, see, the federal, U.S. Federal District Court supported me. Or if they had not been in favor, it would have been appealed to the next level, which is a resolution of district courts battles, which is one step below the Supreme Court. And then we could have actually perhaps even had a Supreme Court ruling, which would have been really cool. So that's the long answer to a question about pressure placed on me. I was investigated. It was eventually dropped. But I think only because I was so prominent and outspoken that they were worried about the blowback. And this supports something I said to you 2 years ago, and I'll say it again. It's not as present now as it was 2 years ago, but I think it's an important point. If you are hesitating to say something, if you're hesitating to speak out, if you're hesitating to present yourself publicly as somebody who is going against the narrative, do it anyway. Not because it's going to get you into trouble. It will. You're going to get some flack. You're going to get people throwing tomatoes at you. You're going to get some spam. You might get some death threats. I got all of that. But what it is going to bring you is it's going to bring you out into view of other people who share your values. And those people will then see you and they will be able to find you. And then you're going to build a whole new community of people that didn't even know you existed because you were sitting quietly before. That's the benefit. In addition to being able to sleep at night and give you some sense of self-respect and the belief that you're doing something good. Beyond all that, though, it's going to give you practical benefit because you're going to gain a whole coterie of people that are on your side, and that's going to lift your spirits and make you happy. And you will not get that. You cannot get that if you stay silent, i.e. hidden. That's the reason why. So don't worry about the blowback. The net gain is going to be tremendous. And I've talked to many people about this, and they've all agreed with me from their own firsthand experience, and I can say it from mine. Yes, I got attacked through the legislature, through the Christina Lawson board, the investigation. Yes, it was stressful, but in the end, I gained far more than I lost.
Hey, before I say my question, we'll have another about 10 minutes of questions, guys, because we do need to wrap up at some point. Yeah, great presentation. I just wanted to say one thing we didn't touch on, because you can't touch on everything, but I want to touch on it now, is, you know, we're facing pretty scary times with the technocrats and censorship and so forth. You know, you're talking to the giants like Google, Facebook, you know, InstaSham, and it's a good thing Musk took over Twitter. But anyway, so yeah, the point where it's pretty scary, because I had a conversation recently with one of my neighbors and talk about COVID, and he was saying, yeah, I've got my third booster, I'm all up to date, and I'm protect. I just looked at him like he's a lunatic, and I like to your point, I'm outspoken. I said, man, stop, why'd you take it, man? That stuff's killing people, don't you know? Really? Yeah, where are you getting your information? That's what they all say. But the scary predicament we're in, as most no doubt know, is that Google, 10 years ago, Google was fine. You'd search whatever you wanted, and it was objective. Now, forget it. Their software is not open source. You don't know what their algorithm is. If they don't want a website appearing in a Google search result, they will squash it. They will bury it. So, I don't know, roundabout way to ask a question, but what are your thoughts on that? What steps to take on that? Because it's a monster of a problem. If you think about it, the scamdemic would have never happened without, I mean, I was, to give you an idea, on Facebook, I had about almost a limit. You'd have 5,000, I had like 4,700 friends, and no one was getting my posts. No one. No happy face, what do they have, thumbs up or no comments? So where do we go from here, man? It's kind of scary.
It's a big problem. There isn't really any easy answer to that. Obviously, what I tell people for dealing with it on a personal level, if they're not able to say what's real and what's not, I say, look at what's being censored and who's censoring. And the one who's censoring is probably lying to you. But on a systems level, it's difficult because there is a monopoly over most sources of information. We don't have a lot of search engines that we can use outside of Google that work, certainly not easily. We don't have a lot of social media that has not been taken over and bought out by one or of the two or three large corporations. But we do have outlets that are perhaps less present throughout the larger country that are growing. Rumble, for example, is a great video platform that as yet has not been censored. And there's a lot of people on Rumble now that are posting a lot of videos and people are seeing them. Twitter, as you mentioned, has been taken back by Musk. And it's not perfect, but it's a hell of a lot better than it was a few years ago. It's not good. And unfortunately, individuals don't have the power to change the systems. They can only change what they listen to and what they watch. So that's an area that I don't see a lot of positive change in yet, because to have an effect on the internet, you usually have to have a powerful system behind you. And most of the powerful systems are corrupt. So the corruption and the lack of accountability in the online world is still a huge problem. And I don't see an easy way to fix that soon.
Hi, thank you, Professor. My name is Rachel. I wanted to say a couple of things. First, the enlightened authors of the 18th century, and in particular Jean-Jacques Rousseau, when he said that the right to your liberty stops when it starts interfering with mine. And so, and then the fathers took that and they put it into the Constitution, correct? And the other thing is, so when they tell me that I have to wear the mask, and if I'm sick, I just don't want to, they're interfering with my right. So that's what they've been doing over and over. The other thing is, I've been trying to finish my degree for the past 10 years, and every time I go to school, I walk out of classes because of what it is. The last one that I had where I walked in is an art class, and I'm taking child development, and I just thought an art class would be good for me. And the first day, the teacher goes around the room and asks questions about who you are, you know, the red thing, and what are your pronouns. So when it came to my, she's an art teacher, and so then I said, well, I'm an old lady, so you're not going to intimidate me like them. And my name is Rachel, my Hebrew name, and I go by Raja. And she said, what are your pronouns? And I said, I just said my pronouns. And you are an art teacher. What is the business of yours to want to know what my sexuality is? You know? And so I just walked out. And I feel devastated because it's been 10 years and I'm trying to freaking finish this degree and I can't find a school. And it's on and on. Another class was about child development. It's all about racism, redlining, and all that. I can't do my essay that way. I just can't. And so I'm very frustrated as to what place I should go to finish. I may not finish. Who cares?
I wish I had a path to send you, Rachel, because educational institutions are thoroughly corrupted at all levels: preschool, kindergarten, K-12, JC, university, undergrad, grad, PhD. There's almost no exceptions. Hillsdale College is great. There's a few, Charter Classical Academy down in Orange County. There's two or three places in the country that I know are solid. All the rest are a disaster. So everyone has to make a decision. Depending on how much they've invested in the program, how much are they willing to compromise to finish versus just abandoning it entirely? And I can't make that decision for any person. I do recommend that no one go to college now. There's no point. I recommend that unless you want to go to medical school, law school, or business school, there's no reason to go to college. And why would you want to go to those three professional schools anyway? They're all corrupt anyway. I think that we are going to see, this is my prediction, Rachel, we're going to see a collapse. And it's already happened, really, at the elites. The whole Harvard, MIT, Princeton scandal with those three. Interesting, isn't it? Also women. presidents, two of the three have gone down. They've been taken out because they supported essentially exterminating Jews. And they're all, actually, that's not true. The Gay was an unqualified affirmative action hire. The other woman was a good academic, but she was a coward, and she was promoting anti-Semitism. But it doesn't matter. The point is that my point is that the authority, the legitimacy of these institutions has been so hollowed out, so shamed, that people no longer have faith or confidence in them. And I think that's going to start to spread throughout the country, which means that we're going to have to build a alternative or parallel system of educational legitimacy for people like you who want to study actual objective subjects and not just use the schools as a way to pander to political ideology. It hasn't happened yet, unfortunately. So in the meantime, I think that people like you are in a tough position. And I wish I had some advice for you, but I don't. It's a very, very difficult situation. I won't pretend that it's not.
My name's John Cassera, but I just want to let you know that I'm retired military. So some of my questioning is going to be associated with that. I have a series of about three or four yes-no questions, and then a concluding question I hope you'll agree with, okay? So it is the government agencies that are imposing all of these rules on top of us. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I think that's generally true, yeah.
Yeah. So also, from what you said earlier, would you also agree with me that we are importing a foreign culture which is antithetical to a constitutional republic?
Oh, that's 100% certain, yes.
Right. Especially if you're a Christian?
Yes, absolutely.
So therefore, we need to seek protection from our government, and we need to provide ourselves with our own personal protection. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So what I'm advocating and have been for some time is that I'm seeing what we do to other countries from a military point of view. We destabilize other countries, and that's what we use our special ops for. Well, they're doing that to us now. So I've been advocating that people get armed now while they can, because pretty soon everybody's going to rush to do it. They're not going to have any money for, not going to get bullets. They're not going to be able to get guns, especially women. I think we've already viewed from Nigeria and from the recent attack on Israel the kinds of treatment that we're going to expect to receive in the United States. So if there is a way to do that by changing your status to a national status, are you familiar with that?
Are you talking about the sovereign citizen?
No.
No.
There is no such thing as a sovereign citizen. That's a made-up term. We have two political statuses, which I can explain to you. One is a U.S. citizen. One is a national of the United States. That's in our code. So we have to, the only way to protect ourselves from our government is to either change our status, and to protect ourselves from the civil disruption that's going to occur is to get armed. There's nothing
else
we can
do. Well, I agree
with
half of what you said. I think that Americans should arm themselves, and they should do it now. The only reason why the U.S., I believe, hasn't collapsed like Australia and England have is because we have a constitution and we have a lot of guns. They don't have either. So that's a problem. As far as the idea of changing statuses, I don't really see that as a practical solution. I think that we need a functioning government, and we need people that can work within the government as citizens to support it. If we take that card off the table, if we assume that we're going to start from scratch, I think that that opens up so much possibility to a complete permanent destabilization that I don't know if we could recover from it. I'm still today of the mindset that we can clean out and reform our nation, because I think the structure is inherently sound, and I think that the government and citizen system is inherently sound, but I think we have too much corruption, which is fed by too much centralization and size of government. So my view, this is, I know this is a very general statement, so I don't have the time to spend, you know, to go into programs and strategies, and that's not really my expertise. But in general, I think that the solution to our problems right now, the ones that you're pointing to, are to shrink down the government and decentralize it. And that means that we need to approach simultaneously a complete gutting of the federal administration and all of the bureaus and their bureaucracies. Just get rid of them all, with maybe two or three exceptions. We need a court. You know, we need borders. We don't need a Department of Education. We don't need a Department of Energy. We don't need a Department of the Environmental Protection Agency. So you know. We don't need any of that. And at the same time, in parallel, we also need to start from the community level and build up a group of governing people from city council and school board to county to state to clean out the government from the bottom up. I think we need both. I don't think either way. The bottom up will work, but it's going to take forever. The top down is going to fail. Trump tried it. It didn't work. We need to do both. We need to kind of sandwich from one end to the other, moving from one end back in, almost like a military operation. You just keep closing down the perimeter, closing it in until you get to the core, almost what they're doing right now in Gaza with the Israelis, and just pinch it down and clean it out. The only other alternative is just to toss it and restart, and I just don't see that as viable. That's just my view.
Well, clearly what you've just done is made the case for exactly what I was suggesting. You don't have an understanding of what I'm talking about. By national status does not eliminate government. It actually puts us in more control for government doing what you want to do. Also, women really need the only equalizer they have against all of this military stuff that's coming. I firmly believe we are going to be at war before the end of the year, is getting armed. Do you agree with that?
I absolutely do. I think women have been the largest purchasers of guns this past year, and Orthodox Jewish women, interestingly, are the biggest subset because of the, yes, and these are not conservative, well, all right, Orthodox Jewish women, yes, but also some of the secular Jewish women who are like liberals, who have been always very either anti-gun or very, very tepid, are now purchasing guns. So I'm very much in support of women arming themselves and men too, because I think that the more armed the population is, the more power we have against individual crime, group crime, and usurpation of our rights by armed government. So I agree with you completely there.
So we have time for one more question, and then Mark is going to be over here at the table talking further with you, and also you can purchase his books. But
yes,
here's our last question for now. Thanks.
Hi. I normally don't like speaking in public, but when you mentioned the whole Israeli-Hamas-Gaza thing, it really struck me. I had to say that I don't believe that the Israeli government has its people's best interest. I mean, you kind of can see that from the whole Pfizer contract they made with their own people. So there's something more nefarious going on here, and I don't really want to just say it's the Palestinians are bad or the Israelis are bad, but I think the Jewish people are being used to, you know, for a land grab or whatever they're doing. But I don't believe destroying Gaza and killing all the Palestinian civilians is the right thing to do, and I think that is wrong.
Yeah, I respect that opinion. I think my point here is really that, and they can both be right at the same time, there was definitely something amiss and nefarious in the, or corrupt at the very least, in the most massive wide-scale adoption of pediatric injections in Israel. They had the highest pickup of children being shot up in any country in the world, any democratic or Western country. And I suspect that a lot of it had to do with money, power, and corruption. I think you're absolutely right. At the same time, I also see the conflict in the Arab-Israeli conflict in pretty black and white terms, if there ever was one. There is a very poor moral track record by the Palestinians going back for 50 to 70 years. You can even look at the massacre of the Israeli Olympic team in Munich in the 70s as an example of that by the Palestinians. Also, this is just a fact. No Arab country in the Middle East will take a single Palestinian in, not one. So if they're really this sort of victimized, wonderful class that's been subjected to years of open-air prison, incarceration, and subjection of torture by the Israelis, and they're just willing to, they just need to break out and achieve what they can achieve, you'd think that the Arab countries would be delighted to have them in. I mean, all these wonderful budding doctors and surgeons and humanitarians in Palestine that are being oppressed by the Jews, well, they're not. because these countries, their Arab brethren, know that the Palestinians and by and large terrorist sympathizers who have done nothing but destroy what would have been the Singapore of the Middle East by taking billions of dollars of aid in and using it to build tunnels and bombs. Because ultimately, the Palestinians in general, with exceptions, I understand there's always exceptions, but in general, they are more animated by murdering Jews than by raising their own level of class and society. That is what they have lived for generations. Yeah, it's well, yes, he said essentially, I think if I'm paraphrasing his quote, he said, the Arab-Israeli conflict will end when the Palestinian mother loves her children more than she hates the Jewish children. And I think that's a very simple way to analogize it. Also, I think another way to describe the Arab-Israeli conflict is as follows. Ask yourself this question. If, and this is coming from Dennis Prager's video about Israel from 20 years ago, I think it still holds true today, even more so. We all want peace in the Middle East. That's what everyone says. But half the people don't really want that. They just want the Jews dead. So they're lying. But be that as they may, everyone says they want peace. If today, if all of the Palestinians and all of the Hamas and Hezbollah and Arab Intifada and PLO and Iranian-sponsored terrorists all put down their weapons, what would happen? There would be peace in the Middle East like that. What would happen, on the other hand, if today all of the Israelis and the IDF put down all their weapons and lay down their arms? Israel would be essentially massacred, the women would be raped and murdered, and Israel would be destroyed and exterminated permanently. And I don't think anyone, regardless of how they feel or view this conflict, can disagree with that statement. I think it's objectively true. Well, you have the right to disagree, but I don't think that the evidence of the last 50 years supports the belief that Israel would be free and peaceful if they were to stop fighting. They would be exterminated, just like the mothers and the babies were gutted and killed and burned and raped and impaled. Up to the thousands 2 months ago, and this is simply true. It's factual, and anyone who denies that is not living in reality. I'm sorry, you're just not. You have the right to have different opinions. Everyone has the right to their opinion. Look, I'm not arguing here.
Hang on.
It's okay.
Hold on a second.
I'm not here to argue.
This is a free speech forum. That means everyone has the right to say what they want to say. So let's make that clear, okay?
No, she's not interrupting. She stated her opinion and her belief, and she has the right to do that. My position is that the facts of history and recent reality discount the possibility, not the opinion, but the possibility that it is even in a magical realm, it is not possible that there will be peace in the Middle East today if Israel stops fighting. They will be destroyed and exterminated. That, I think, is so factually obvious that I don't know how one could not then reach the conclusion that there is a serious problem with violence in the Middle East among the Arab Muslim population. But that's my opinion and conclusion from that fact. Anyway, today I'm not here to talk and argue about Middle East. That's not my purpose. It is to talk about freedom and rights and where we've gone wrong, where we can get better, and why I think things are going to get really bad in the next 6 months before they get better. And I hope that there's been something at least thought-provoking, if not valuable, that you can take away from that. And I will be available to discuss further if you have any comments or questions at the table. Happy to entertain that, even and especially disagreement. I have no problem with disagreement. All I ask is that when people disagree, that they please speak from a position of being informed and thinking for themselves, because I tire of talking to automatons who are not engaged in even reading and being part of the world. I'm just kind of fed up at this point. I don't think any of you here are of that group. I'm just saying in general, that's why I often don't engage with people anymore in public, out on the street, because usually, not always, but usually when they come up to me and make a challenge, it's based on psychosis. And I just, like I said, when I was working in psych wards, there's no point in disagreeing or arguing with psychotics because they have nothing really to offer except their craziness. Anyway.
Well, doctor, thank you very much for coming and speaking to us. Dr. Mark McDonald, thank you.
Thank you all for coming and asking questions and even challenging questions. Like I said, I'm happy to answer any questions you have.